Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Divine Goddess Radio. We are your hosts, Marie Langley
and Beth Jacobson,
and we are very excited to have you join us. We have created this show as a venue to discuss the many facets of healing, shifting, and spirituality. We will have discussions on various topics, and we feature many guests, including healers, psychics, mediums, and speakers.
And our show is on Sundays from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. You can follow our show on Blog Talk Radio by clicking on the follow button, and check out our blog at divinegoddessradio.wordpress.com. And our email address is divinegoddessradio@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear your feedback and insight on our show. You can reach Beth at 651-900-4136 or Marie at 651-303-0555 if you want to talk about our show and give us some insight. You can also download our shows as a podcast using the iTunes or RSS feed buttons on our Blog Talk Radio page. And also, you can like our Facebook page on Divine Goddess Radio.
And usually we have our chat room open, but for some reason it's not loading tonight. So if you, while you're listening to our show, if you do have questions for Paula, you can call us at 347-327-9360. And today we are speaking with Paula Quinlan, who is a healthy living coach, educator, and speaker. Paula reclaimed her life from chronic Lyme disease the natural, healthy way. Her website is paulaquinlan.com, and her phone number is 612-719-0228. Welcome, Paula.
Hello, Paula.
So, hello, ladies. Thank you very much for inviting me to be on your show today.
Oh, we're honored to have you on here. Well, Paula, why don't we just jump right on in? We were talking earlier, and you're saying May is Lyme Disease Month. Why don't you talk a little bit more about that and a little bit more about yourself?
Okay. Well, we just recently, about a week and a half ago, Governor Mark Dayton was blessed us with the proclamation of May being Lyme Month for Minnesota, and that has really helped us with getting awareness and publicity out in regarding to Lyme disease. We've got somewhat of an epidemic going on in Minnesota in regards to tick-borne diseases, infectious diseases like Lyme disease and all the different co-infections that the ticks are carrying. And just, you know, a little bit about myself is I did reclaim my life from chronic Lyme disease, and I am now thriving as a result of all the many different holistic things that I did to reclaim my life. And so just a little bit of background prior to my journey with Lyme disease, I was in the asphalt construction business for 30 years and quite successful at that business. And then, unfortunately, a chain of events happened in my life that caused a lot of stress, and then I encountered some type of a tick-borne disease called Lyme disease with five different co-infections, and that dramatically changed my life in over a five-year time period before I finally broke through to the other side and started thriving again. So life has been quite an interesting journey for me, and now I'm living life on purpose, with a purpose, and looking to help a lot of people do the same thing.
Well, that's wonderful. Can you tell, there might be some listeners out there who don't really know what Lyme disease is. Can you kind of explain what that is?
Well, Lyme disease is kind of a catch-all for infections that are carried by typically the deer tick. There's many different ways that the disease can be contracted, but the most typical way is through a deer tick. And then a lot of the symptoms are such that you have a lot of lethargy, or you have a lot of brain fog, a lot of brain pain. And sensitivity to light, sensitivity to hearing. Sometimes people will experience Bell's palsy, where a side of your face becomes paralyzed. And some people have really intense joint pain, almost like an arthritic pain, and intense swelling of different joints, especially the knees and the ankles and the fingers and things like that. And intense fever sometimes. And some of the symptoms that I had prior to really figuring out what was going on was I would within just a matter of minutes, I would feel this energy shift in my lungs, and then I would start coughing, and then within a couple of hours, I would have a temperature of about 103 to 100, almost 104, and that would hold for about 6 hours, and then all of a sudden, the fever would break, and then just like that, I would have projectile vomiting, and the body pain would just be so intense in my balance, in my sense of hearing, and in my ability to see, my vision would be way off, and so literally if I needed to make a trip to the bathroom, I was literally leaning against a wall or crawling on the floor to get to the bathroom, and so it was some pretty intense symptoms, and I had a lot of tremors. It affected my central nervous system, the bacteria associated with a Lyme infection. Is extremely an intelligent bacteria, and it has the ability to be very mobile. Once it gets into your system through the bite, it gets into the bloodstream. It likes to leave that bloodstream as quickly as possible and get its way, start burying its way through the tissue. And it's been documented that within very short amount of time, 10, 12, 24 hours, that it can leave the bloodstream, get into the tissue, start traveling through the body, cross the blood-brain barrier, and then get into the brain and start causing all kinds of infection. And then when it pierces that blood-brain barrier, it opens up that blood-brain barrier, much like you wear that screen on your screen door and you got a hole in your screen, and at night those mosquitoes can see that and get into your house then. Well, it's much like that when it comes to the blood-brain barrier. When that blood-brain barrier is pierced, it allows white blood cells to enter the brain, because the function of the white blood cells is to help, combat invaders. Well, white blood cells are not supposed to be in the brain, and when white blood cells get into the brain, that causes an additional problem along with the infection from the Lyme bacteria. So it can get to be a pretty insidious disease, especially if it's not caught right away after the initial infection.
Mm-hmm. And how, I know I've heard that, one of the telltale first signs are like a bullseye rash.
Well, the people that do get a bullseye rash are the most fortunate people, because that, typically that is a telltale sign that you better get your, little butt to the doctor as quickly as you possibly can, and hopefully it's a doctor that's been educated to know and understand that with a telltale bullseye rash, that person needs to be on synthetic antibiotics as quickly as possible, and hopefully that doctor's going to have enough information and education to prescribe the synthetic antibiotics, typically it's doxycycline, for 4 to 6 weeks. Because the bacteria is so intelligent that if you only do 2 weeks worth of the antibiotics, the bacteria can very quickly create a shield around itself, a protein shield around itself, so that synthetic antibiotic is not going to be effective and the immune system is not going to be effective. And now that bacteria can take and bury itself deep into a cell and lay there dormant. And it can lay dormant for 15, 20 years. And then some stressful event happens in your life, like maybe your spouse of 50 years died, or you lost your job unexpectedly, or you're in something like being in a car accident causing a traumatic injury. That causes intense stress in the body. It shuts down the immune system, and that bacteria can sense that your immune system is not working. It'll come out of hiding, and it'll start ravaging your body, and it'll start duplicating. And in a very, very short amount of time, it can cause tremendous amount of damage and inflammation throughout the whole body systems. It can be in the joints, it can be in the heart, it can be in the brain, it can be in the lungs, so there's a variety of different places that it can hide itself and protect itself from the immune system and the antibiotics.
What? 20 years?
Yep.
It can be dormant for up to 20 years.
Yep. Yeah, I go to Lyme support group meetings around town, and I listen to the story of a lot of people, and they've been battling this for 15, 20, 30 years. In fact, I work I've got a client that a couple of clients that I work with long distance, and it's a mother and a daughter. And the daughter is 34 years old. She was born with a Lyme disease, so it's been a battle for her all her life. Hmm. And then, two of them experience a lot of the same symptoms. And so working with them long distance and kind of helping them along with, different healing modalities that I use to help with my healing process.
Well, so when were you first diagnosed?
Well, when we kind of started putting everything together at the end of 2006, I was shopping at Fresh and Natural up in Shoreview, and I was walked by their little bookstore that they have there, and it was just like this book almost flew off the shelf at me. And I picked it up, and the name of the book was Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, and Lyme Disease. Well, the fibromyalgia part of the title was what caught my eye, because I'd been diagnosed with fibromyalgia back in the mid-1990s when fibromyalgia was, with a new buzzword at that time. Mm-hmm. And I had been to the doctor with all kinds of the symptoms that I now know are symptomatic of Lyme disease. And I was to a rheumatoid arthritis doctor several different times, and he couldn't figure out what was wrong. And was on, tried a lot of different pain medication stuff, and was working. And so finally I just said, enough of this, and stopped going to the doctor and just kind of, took it into my own hands and started doing, lots of supplements and stuff, and that kind of stabilized things for a while. Kind of got my life under control, and then in 2000, early part of 2006, May 2006, I was working down in Rock Rapids, Iowa, the northwest corner of Iowa, just across the Minnesota border, and I had an asphalt consulting business at that time. And I was working down in Rock Rapids, Iowa with a new client. And I woke up one morning and I noticed that I had two bites on the side of my right neck and then one up in my right temple. But there were little red rashes, and they were big enough to be apparent when I looked at myself in the mirror in the morning. And I didn't think anything of it. But about 4 weeks later, I came down with what I thought was the summer flu. And I happened to be between jobs, so I was back at home in Minneapolis, and so I just, felt really crappy, stayed in bed, took care of myself, so I knew I was having to go back on the road in a week, so I did, and went out, did another job, and came back, and then I got sick again, and so I thought, And then after about 4 months of this, going through this cycle of being sick every 4 weeks, that's when I came across the book over at Fresh and Natural, and I started piecing things together, and because I opened the book, read about fibromyalgia to see if there was anything new from the mid-1990s, and there really wasn't anything new. So then I opened a chapter on Lyme disease and started reading through that, and I got about 4 or 5 pages into the chapter and come across this symptom checklist, and there was 38 symptoms on the checklist, and I had 33 of the 38 symptoms.
Oh, my
anyway.
God.
Okay, I think... you're making a phone call here, and so I got on the phone and I called my naturopath I was working with, and I just I asked him. I said, the naturopath I was working with, he was doing what was called electrical dermal screening, and it's an energy reading machine and computerized machine. And so I called him. I said, can you check me with the EDS machine for the frequency of Lyme? And he says, yeah. He says, come on in. So sure enough, we determined that I had Lyme disease, but at that time, we didn't understand it like we do now, and we didn't realize that there was also a multitude of co-infections along with it. So all I did was the first 4 years, all I did was do treatment for the actual Lyme disease portion of the infection. And I could get so far, and then things, I would kind of plateau, and then something would happen, and then I would crash again. And so it was about four years into it, I connected with somebody else that told me about this other naturopath who had healed herself of Lyme disease and does EDS as well. So I got a hold of her and went and seen her. And she identified that I had 5 co-infections as well, which required a totally different I was on an herbal and essential oil program at that point in time, and several homeopathics, and so based off identifying the different co-infections, then I had to totally switch my program to go after the co-infections and to be able to help reduce the toxic load from the co-infections. And once I did that, and that really helped me to start breaking through to the other side. With it was an interesting journey. There was a lot of, I just shared with a group yesterday, and it was like 3 slides of all the different things that I did over the years to help shift my energy, to help shift my frequency, and help bring back the homeostasis, help bring back the harmony so that I could, break through to the other side and I could start surviving and then move into
thriving. So what were
some
of the conventional treatments that you did use? And then we'll switch over to the homeopathic that you're using. So those people who are currently in the, the traditional conventional treatment.
Uh-huh.
What were some of those that you were doing?
The only conventional thing that I did was because I started the herbal and essential oil treatment at the end of December. It was right before Christmas, and then by the middle of January, as a result of starting the herbal and essential oil treatment, I started going through healing crises. Most people will refer to it as a Herxmeyer effect. I refer to it as a healing crisis because it's a necessary evil to reduce the toxic load for the body to bring the immune system back into control. And so that started in the middle of January, and in the middle of February had another healing crisis. When the body started doing all the detoxing, not only was it addressing and fighting the bacterial infection, it also was starting to bring up all the toxic accumulation of working 30 years with asphalt. And so I developed pneumonia on top of it. And so I would cough 24/7. It would feel like my lungs were trying to turn themselves inside out. So I developed pneumonia to the point that I couldn't even breathe, and I actually had to leave work, went to my primary physician and walked in, and I said, need some help because I can't breathe. And she says, well, let's do the chest x-ray and let's do a white blood count. And so she left. I got that chest x-ray done, and then I sat me back in the room while she read the x-rays and checked the white blood count. And she came back in and she went, oh, my God, Pollard. She says, your white blood count is off the charts. And she says, you got pneumonia in your left lung. And she says, we need to get you into the hospital. And then the next thing that came out of her mouth was, but you don't look sick. And that is a very, very typical statement that people who are infected with Lyme disease and the co-infections, when they go into a doctor and ask for help, that is a very typical response that people will get is, you don't look sick. So you come in with all these symptoms, and then another typical response is, it's all in your head. Go see a psychiatrist. So that was the only thing that I did as far as conventional was in February of 2006. I had what's called a Z-Pack, and that's the synthetic antibiotic. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't even tell you what type it is because it's not anything I studied, and it's not anything that I'm concerned about. But it was it was 5 days worth of antibiotics that was equivalent to taking it for 10 days. Mm-hmm. And then I had a relapse of the pneumonia in April of that year, so I had to go back in the doctor and got another Z-Pack. And then after that, it just even though I would still go through the healing crisis, I didn't have the intense backup into the lungs that I was having the first few days or the first few months. And so I didn't have to do any more antibiotics after that. And so what little bit of antibiotics I did typically was... basically all it did would help to send the bacteria even deeper into the tissue because, like I mentioned earlier, the bacteria is so intelligent when you start bringing in synthetic antibiotics that will quickly cover itself up with a protein sheath and then it will hide itself deep into the tissue.
Oh, wow. That's... I mean, this is why, I live in Minnesota, too, and ever since I've lived here, I've been always afraid of the ticks. Like, when we would go up north, I'm like, I will not walk in anything because I don't want anything to attach to me.
Well, and unfortunately, that's the attitude that a lot of people in Minnesota are taking now as well, and that's one of the worst things that you can do, because when you step into that energy of fear, you give away your power. Now, what you're going to do is actually attract that energy to you then.
That's why I'm doing the right thing, because I love being in nature and out in the woods, and it's just like, you know, I say my little prayers, and, you know, there's no need to. You know, I believe there's other stuff going on there, too. So what are some of the healing stuff that you do?
A lot at that point in time was of course, like I mentioned, essential oils. I was doing a lot of essential oils, putting them in capsules, taking them internally, and I was putting them on topically. I had rainforest herbs that I was using, like Una de Gato, Sangre de Agua, and I used a lot of it, and I worked with a medical intuitive long distance, and he'd be able to read my energy, and this was like July of that year. And I was really struggling, and I knew I was still doing right, like a lot of the right things, but it just seemed like there was a missing piece to it. And a friend of mine connected me with a medical intuitive, and he started reading my energy, and he says, "You keep doing what you're doing." He said, "I need you to add one more thing to it." And he said, "I need you to add enzymes, plant-based enzymes that are really high in protease to your program, and do five capsules five times a day." And so when I did that, I was in the middle of July, and it took until October of that year to be able to break that cycle where I was going through that Herxmeyer, that healing crisis, anywhere from every 3 to 4 weeks. In October of that year, I had two healing crises about 3 days apart, and then that was the last that I had. You know, to that extent, I had many of them thereafter. They just weren't to that intensity that I was having in the first 10 months of that year.
Wow! Holy cow!
Yeah.
So Paula, where since we are now getting finally, we've got spring and people can get outside and roam. Where are ticks located? I mean, where would you run into them mostly?
Well, the most typical place is going to be like when you're out in the woods, or if you got a lot of brush, woodsy brush around the perimeter of if you're living in town, and a lot of people like face up onto a lake and things like that, or they have trees with a lot of brush and stuff. They like to sit in the brush. They like to sit on the ends of the blades of grass, and they just kind of sit there and wait, or they'll ride around on the little mouse creatures, rabbits, birds are really helpful in transferring the ticks. What ticks are searching for, ticks don't have eyes, so they can't tell whether you're an animal or a human. And so what they have sensors, and so what they sense is heat, and they sense carbon dioxide. And so all mammals, whether you're human or an animal, have heat, and you give off carbon dioxide. So that's what they sense. So if you happen to be walking along that blade of grass that they're sitting on, or that brush that they're sitting on, they will sense that, and then they'll jump. And that's why, I have the common sense tips for taming the tick. Common sense, wear light-colored clothing when you're out in the woods. Wear long sleeves. Wear long pants. Tuck your pants into your socks, or duct tape your pants around your ankles. And they look like a little bit dorky, but you know what? It sure is worth it, so you don't have to go through 5, 10, 15, 20 years of hell.
Right.
And, wear a hat, And then, you can invest in things like clothing that have been pre-treated with a chemical called permethrin, which is a chemical that's embedded in the clothing, and if the tick lands on that, it actually kills the tick. Well, my concern was, if it's so strong that it kills the tick, if I'm wearing something like that and I'm outside sweating, is that chemical wearing off on me and being absorbed nobody... whether there's any documentation out there or not, I don't know, and I have never experienced that type of clothing, so I can't say yes or no to it. I just know that I love my essential oils, and I created a tick spray using essential oils that I use whenever I go outdoors. So.
Wow! Oh, what kind of oils?
Young Living Essential Oils is the brand name that I work with. I'm a representative for Young Living Essential Oils. So created a tick spray based off of a lot of different ideas from people that I've connected with over the years. And so I do have a tick spray available that I use. And many people have used it. And it's also safe for animals if you got, like, cats and dogs.
Wow. So are all ticks infected then, Paula?
No, not all ticks are infected. I just right off the top of my head, I don't recall what the percentage is, especially in, I know in Wisconsin, our bordering state, Wisconsin is like 80% infected. And so Minnesota is one of the top 10 states for the most infected ticks. So, you know, I can give you my best guess, and it's probably 50 to 60% maybe of the ticks that are infected. So, it's increased dramatically. The Minnesota Department of Health just issued their new map showing the areas of, the counties within Minnesota that are hot spots within Minnesota. And so that is, pretty much since 2008, it looks like it's pretty much doubled, almost tripled in the coverage on the map for infected tick counties.
Wow. Ooh. Yeah. I'm like, you should see the look on my mouth. I'm just like, oh, there goes.
I know, and my arm's itching, so.
Okay, so then, how can you tell if a tick is infected? Is there a look to them, or?
No, you can't tell if a tick is infected. In fact, you're probably not even going to see the tick unless it might possibly, if it's an adult tick, might be large enough to see. But most ticks, a lot of ticks are so tiny. Like yesterday during the seminar that we had, I actually showed them a picture of a graphic that had gotten off Facebook, and somebody had taken a picture of a tick sitting on a poppy seed bun. And so I asked a group of 35 people, can you see the tick on this poppy seed bun? And nobody could see it.
Oh, my God. That's scary.
So that's how small the ticks can be, because the adult females will give birth to, 1,500 to 3,000 eggs in the spring. And then those eggs will evolve to a larva, and then they'll evolve to a nymph, and so that nymph is so tiny that you almost have to have a magnifying glass to even see it. So if that nymph is what latches on to you, because ticks have a 2-year cycle, and so they've got to feed in the spring, and they've got to feed in the fall before winter settles in. And so that, if you happen to be one of those little nymphs that latches on to you, you're probably not even going to know it until it's been attached to you and it's been feeding off you for a couple, 2 or 3 days. Now the belly is going to swell up and might get large enough so that you can see it. But a lot of times people don't even know it's been attached to them. It'll suck for 3 days and then it'll drop off. And then maybe a week, 2 weeks, maybe even a month, maybe sometimes 6 months later, you might develop a rash in that area. One of the things that if you do develop a rash, one of the things that they suggest is that take and mark the outer edge of the rash, because if it expands beyond that area within 24 hours, then you better be getting yourself into a medical doctor who knows how to diagnose Lyme disease. Because there's a real good probability that you've been infected. Because only about 30% of the people that get infected with a tick-borne disease are going to develop a rash. And about 30% of the 30% will develop a bullseye rash. So is a bullseye rash a good diagnostic tool? No, it's not.
Oh.
And then with children, only about 10% of the children get infected with the tick-borne diseases will develop a rash, whether it be, a solid rash or whether it be a bullseye rash.
Is it like an itchy rash?
It could be an itchy rash. It could be a real painful rash. It depends on the individual how the body responds to that rash.
Okay, because I had a reaction in the winter, like around December, and now I'm thinking, oh, my God, I hope it wasn't some tiny little tick that found me.
Last winter I did get a call from a friend up in the Wisconsin area. Her boyfriend had been out deer hunting, and about 4 days after he got back, he started complaining about his belly button hurt. And it got all inflamed and red, so the girlfriend got the flashlight out, started digging around in there, and found an embedded tick. So she was frantic, called me, she said, what do I do, Paul? And I said, you get him to the nearest doctor and get him on 4 to 6 weeks of doxycycline. You know, even though I do a lot of, I do a holistic, there's a time and a place for synthetic antibiotics, and when you got an initial infection like that or initial bite that is reactive that quickly, yeah, synthetic antibiotics are going to be your best bet for helping support the immune system. You know, literally, it's not going to do much support for the immune system, but it's going to help eradicate that infection and reduce that toxic load. And so you'll use the synthetic antibiotics, but also be prepared that you're going to have to invest in rebuilding that immune system, because those synthetic antibiotics are going to kill all the life in your intestinal tract as it's going after that invader.
So if you find a tick attached to you, what do you do? How do you get it off?
Well, one of the things that we do not suggest doing, that some people will take a cigarette butt and hold it to it, and then the tick will back out. Well, the one thing you do not want to do is startle the tick. Because when you startle the tick, if it's already been sucking at you and it's got a belly full of blood, you startle the tick, it's going to inject that blood back into your bloodstream, and then it's going to that blood has already been commingled with the bacterial infection and the viral infections that are sitting inside the belly of that tick. So that's all going to get injected back into your bloodstream. So what we suggest is you have some type of a tweezer. They actually make special tick removal utensils that you can get at sporting goods stores, places like that, that you want to get as close to the mouth and literally get down to the skin and grab a hold of it and pull it straight up. And, you know, and if the mouth happens to detach from the body, you know, take the body out first and then go back, and then you're going to have to, you know, dig out the mouth.
I'm just like, I don't even know how to comment on this. I'm just sitting here with my mouth open going, oh, God.
You don't need to, you know, this insect, and I don't even know if it's an insect or it's a bug or what it is. You know, this tick is so intelligent that it'll take and put down an anesthesia onto your skin first so that you're not going to feel the bite. And then it puts down glue so it can glue its feet to you or portions of its mouth to you before it inserts the sucker. So you're, a lot of times you are not even...
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I mean, it's very... Occasionally I do come across a person that does feel the sting when the tick penetrates, but most people are not even going to know. Not even going to know. Like last fall, I was standing outside in the backyard talking to my landlady, and I had on a sleeveless top. And, you know, 3 hours before, I'd been to the bathroom, looked in the mirror, and there was nothing on my arm, but then I stood outside and underneath the tree talking with my landlady. Went back in, getting ready for bed, looked in the mirror, and I could see this spot on my left arm. And I looked, and here I had a wood tick attached in that short amount of time, just from standing under that tree. So that's why I say, you know, even though the grasses are the most typical place to, you know, for a tick to hang out, waiting for that species of animal, whether it be a human or whether it be a mouse or a deer or whatever, to come by, because, like I say, all they can sense is carbon dioxide and heat. And so that those ticks are just so intelligent to be able to do what they do.
You know, there's an animal speak book by Ted Andrews, and he has a list of what every animal and every insect means. I'm going to have to look up and see if there's anything to do with tick and, you know, what specific messages spiritually that they're here to give to us, because it's really interesting how the population of Lyme disease is going up. So, you know,
well,
there's something...
And that's some of the things that I talked about yesterday, is that, you know, we are spiritual beings having a human experience, and we look at, you know, the human species, how we evolved over the centuries. Mm-hmm. And we've been inundated with a multitude of plagues over the centuries to evolve through the human species that we are. And we've always returned to Mother Nature for our remedies mm-hmm. to be able mm-hmm. to survive as the human species. And so one of the things that I, you know, when I was just talking with some of the people afterwards, you know, they would come up to me and they would say, thank you so much, Paula, for bringing the spiritual aspect into this healing from the Lyme disease. And so I would talk to them and explain to them, I truly believe that the people that are being infected with these tick-borne diseases are being called to a higher purpose. And that's why I call myself Healthy Living on Purpose Coach. Because it's really for you, if you want to survive, you get infected and you want to survive this disease, you really have to go internally and find your purpose for living.
Oh.
And then when you determine that purpose for living, that's going to help you to get through your healing process, to get through to the other side, and then to step into what are you going to do now? Because you don't want to go back to your old life, because that's what got you into the situation in the first place. Because when you start looking at frequency, vibration, and frequency, energy, the natural law of nature is that once energy is created, it can never be destroyed. It can only be transformed. So you look at the transformations of the human species over the centuries to get where we are today. And you look at, we got 75 trillion cells in our body, but we got 10 times as many bacteria in our body than we do cells. So we kind of need to have the bacteria to continue to exist as the human species. So what purpose now is this infection serving for us? Is this going to help us evolve to a higher functioning species? And I truly believe it will for those who step into that spiritual aspect of it to be able to do their healing and understand that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And that's why I bring a lot of the spiritual aspect into it when I'm working with the clients and I do presentations like we did yesterday.
Wow. If anybody listening has a question for Paula, please feel free to call in. The number is area code 347-327-9360. And Paula, you said that you were speaking at an event yesterday. What other events do you have coming up that you'd like to let people know of?
Next weekend, May 10th and 11th, is the Worldwide Lyme Disease Awareness Weekend. It's a Friday and a Saturday. And the last I checked on the Worldwide Lyme website, I believe we've got like 25 countries that are participating in something like 25 to 30 of the states that are participating. And so, all the participants, people inflicted with Lyme disease, they're gathering together and they're doing Lyme awareness events on those days. Here in Minnesota, we will be up there, a group of us will be up at Cabela's in Rogers, Minnesota.
Okay.
All day Saturday, May 11th, and we'll be available to answer questions, to hand out literature in regards to Lyme disease. I've got a whole series of different brochures that I have available to hand out. Like one of them is Top 10 Tips to Prevent Chronic Lyme Disease, and that's put about by the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. I've got another one called The ABCs of Lyme Disease, and that's put out by the Lyme Disease Association. And I've got one by LADS, the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society, is what every primary care physician should know about Lyme disease. And I've got another one from the Lyme Disease Association called the Lyme R Primer, to learn all about Lyme and other tick-borne diseases. So you got information not only on Lyme, but you also got information about all the co-infections as well that come with it. Because when you are infected with a tick-borne disease, each one of those co-infections have to be treated, and it's going to be a different treatment for each one of them along with the treatment for the Lyme disease. So it can be a pretty intense program to be able to bring back the homeostasis to the body so we get that immune system back into control. Because a lot of people, like yesterday, we had a lot of discussion on curing Lyme disease. And finally, I just said, you know, is it curing Lyme disease or is it about healing? Is it about bringing back and bringing the body back into homeostasis and bringing back the harmony and the energetics of the harmony back to the body? Or is it about curing? You know, because you can't really cure anything, mm-hmm. in my opinion, because we're always going to be inundated with stress. And it may not be a tick-borne stress. It may be that you have a death in the family, or it may be that you have a car accident, or it may be that you lose your job. That stress causes a lot of physiological changes in your body. And the first thing that happens is your digestive system shuts down and your immune system shuts down. And that opens you up to a whole host of disease.
You know, if this disease is prevalent throughout the world, why are the physicians not educated as much?
Well, it's a very controversial issue. There's a really good DVD available for people to learn more about it. The DVD is called Under Our Skin. It's a documentary that was created in 2008 and debuted in 2010, and they followed six different people, I believe it was six or eight different people, who were diagnosed with chronic Lyme disease, and followed them under treatments and their recovery process over like a 3-year period. And what was debuted in that is that there is a huge amount of controversy between the Infectious Disease Society of America and the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. So you got two different associations with two different views of chronic Lyme. The Infectious Disease Society of America openly declares that there is no such disease as chronic Lyme disease. That if you do get infected with, or you do have a tick bite, they assume that you get infected, that 4 weeks worth of antibiotics is the cure. And then if you continue to have symptoms, it's a result of something else. And so it's a huge controversy between those two associations. And what was brought out in that DVD is that the authors of the guidelines for the medical doctors to abide by for making a diagnosis of Lyme disease, the authors are pretty much what we refer to as being in bed with the insurance companies. Mm. And so now, what has happened multitude of times on the East Coast and the West Coast, it has not happened yet, or it hasn't happened in Minnesota. I know there was one doctor in Wisconsin that was called before his medical board and had to fight for his license. But what's happening is that, you know, because there's this declaration by the Disease Society of America that chronic disease, Lyme disease, does not exist as a chronic disease, that if physicians treat and document based, you know, saying that it is Lyme disease and they treat with long-term antibiotics, they get pulled before their medical boards, they get stripped of their license, and that opens the door for the insurance companies to come in and sue them to recoup their losses as a result of paying for the treatment. That puts that practitioner out of business, or not the practitioner, but the doctor out of business then. So we've got several Lyme literate doctors, in the United States that have had to close their business. We've got some that are still fighting for their license to be able to continue to practice. We've got one doctor that has helped like over 15,000 children, and he's fighting for his license to stay in practice to be able to continue to help children infected with this insidious disease. So it's a very controversial topic, and so if people want to learn more about it, Under Our Skin is the best way to find out more about it. And gratefully, in Minnesota, there was a moratorium passed, I believe it was in back in the middle of 2010, I believe it was. It was like a five-year, it's a five-year moratorium, so we got like 2 years left on it. And so what that did here in Minnesota was allow medical doctors to step up and say, yes, I'll treat you for Lyme disease, and you can, and we can treat with long-term antibiotics without fear of being pulled before their medical board and being stripped of their medical license and then being sued. And but most of those Lyme literate doctors, as far as I know, all the Lyme literate doctors says, yes, we can treat you. It's on a cash basis so that they don't have to deal with the insurance companies. They'll treat you, but you have to come in with cash, and then they'll give you the paperwork to be able to file with your insurance company, and then you can deal with the after effect with the insurance company. So the waiting list to get into Lyme literate doctors is anywhere from 3 to 6 months long.
Wow.
So that's why, that's one of the reasons why I don't advocate Western medicine, because I believe there really truly is that so many of our answers are found with Mother Nature, and you know, because Lyme literate doctors, I've heard many Lyme literate doctors speak, and much of what they say is the same thing that I did. Is you're going to be eating organic. You got to reduce the toxic load on your body, so you got to address your personal care products. You got to address the toxic environment that you live in. So it may be that you have to clean up your bedroom and move the electronics from your bedroom. It may be that you have to call in a building biologist to mitigate dirty electricity that you may have in, going on in your home environment, particularly in your bedroom. You may have to mitigate geopathic stress that may be preventing your body from healing. And mold and mildew issues, that's got to get cleaned up. If you still have mercury in your teeth, that's all got to go. If you got root canals, that's causing problems for you. And so it's just a whole host of things that you have to look at to reduce the environmental toxic load on your body. And that doesn't even take into consideration the toxic thoughts that start developing when, you know, because, I mean, that is a challenge. When you're infected with an insidious disease like this, severe depression will set in. And so
right. It
is a challenge being able to shift out of that. It took me the better part of 4 years to be able to shift out of that depression. I was literally suicidal in January or July of 2007, and I remember just curling up like a baby on my bed, and I just remember saying, I can't do this anymore. Mm. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And I was just starting to drift off to sleep, and all of a sudden I just, and, you know, how that message got through to me, I don't know. And I, you know, at this point, I don't care. I just accepted it. And that message says, it's not time for you yet. You got work to do. And I just kind of remember saying, just kind of speaking, you know, in a soft whisper. I said, but I can't do it alone anymore.
Yeah.
And then I drifted off to sleep. And when I woke up, it was just like, you know, my whole vision shifted. And it was at that point I knew that I would get well. I just didn't know how I was going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
God, that's amazing. That's an amazing story.
Very inspirational, Paula. Very inspirational.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you have a lot of people that you meet who sit here, and what would you say their one commonality is? Is it lack of support, feeling like they're alone, lack of, you know, lack of education?
Well, no, because there's all kinds of education out there, and there's all kinds of support. We've got lots of Lyme support group meetings around the state now, and so there's all kinds of support. I mean, that's one thing about the Lyme community is you got all kinds of support. If you are in, if it is, you know, the Western medical model support, that is what resonates with you. That didn't resonate with me. When I first figured out what was wrong with me, we had one Lyme support group meeting going on at that time, and I called the group, and I says, you know, tell me about your group. And, you know, the first thing they told me was, well, we'll get you lined up with a Lyme literate doctor so you can get on antibiotics. And I says, well, okay, that's not an option for me. I said, because I had an experience, I had experience in the early 20s. I'd fallen off a horse, and I developed an infection all over my body, and it's to the point that, you know, the doctor wanted to start taking out body parts. I was so badly infected.
Oof,
and I said, no. I said, no. And so I was on antibiotics and pain medications for over a year. And so I knew the devastation that, you know, doing something like that would do again, especially in my, you know, I was, you know, in just in my early 50s at the time that I was infected. And so, you know, and so I said, no, not doing it. And that's why, you know, made the phone call to the naturopath. And I just trusted that the God spirit, the universe, would align me with the people and the resources for me to be able to do the healing that I needed to do. Because like I said, once I decided to stay here on Earth, I had the vision, you know, had to know, the knowing that I was going to break through to the other side. I just didn't know how long it was going to take. I just didn't know how I was going to do it. And I just had to turn my trust over to the higher spirit and go within and find that inner light and know that things were going to be okay.
Wow. So do you believe you can 100% be healed from this then?
Well, you know, how, you know, can anybody, like you say, can anybody ever be 100% healed? Because I don't, in the microbiologist, the pathologist that we had talk yesterday, he even said that you'll never totally eradicate all the spirochetes and all the infection, because there will always be something laying dormant in your system. So it's going to be a matter of how do I maintain the homeostasis, the harmony within, so that the immune system stays in control. Because like I say, you know, I got 10 times as more bacteria in my body than I do cells. And so, you know, it's a matter of how do I maintain that homeostasis and the harmony and keep the immune system in control. And it's not about curing, it's about maintaining the wellness, and it's about maintaining the healing. And then, you know, continuing to rise and evolve to a higher functioning human being.
Well, I am so, so glad that you came on right at perfect timing with it being the month of May.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's perfect timing for you to get this information out there even more, you know, with our broad podcast. People can download this at any time. So.
Yeah, I think, I learned, you know, a lot too. And I think it's important too for people to know if they do have these lingering symptoms, you know, where they might think it's chronic fatigue or, you know, whatever, to go in and really examine this. Because, you know, like you said, if it lays dormant and then comes back, you know, or gets activated.
Well, one of the speakers that we had yesterday, Diana Barron, she's a licensed psychologist, and she was medically misdiagnosed by the Western doctors, and told her it was all in her head. And so she had a very similar journey to what I had, and took her 8 years to break through to the other side. She's now in the process of developing an assessment tool for psychologists and other practitioners to be able to use and utilize, so that when, you know, clients and patients start, you'll come in for services, and they start coming in with this whole list of symptoms,
mm-hmm.
they've got an assessment tool that they can go to be able to help you know, kind of narrow down, you know, is this a psychiatric problem or is it something else that we need to be taking a look at?
Mm-hmm.
And so, the people that were at the event yesterday, she was on her first draft of it, and they were already saying, can I be sharing this with my teacher? Can I be taken to this to kindergarten, you know, and things like that. So I know that this is going to be an extremely valuable tool when she finally gets it finished. And we're going to ask her to come back to our, we're going to repeat the event in September 21st down in Eden Prairie, and we're going to be asking her to come back and give us an update on where she's at.
Where can people find information on all the events? I know we gave out your website address earlier, but is that the best
place?
Yeah,
I got an event calendar on my website, so I post a lot of things on my event calendar for even a lot of things that I'm not personally involved with. If it really is something of interest to me, I'll post it on my event calendar. And then one of the events that we have coming up is Laughs for Lyme on May 22nd in Roseville, and that is a benefit for the Minnesota Lyme Association, featuring a must-see comedy by the Looney Lutherans. We're also going to feature a silent auction along with it.
Oh, okay.
And so.
All right. And If anybody wants to check out Paula's website, it is paulaquinlan.com, and Quinlan is spelled Q-U-I-N-L-A-N.
Yes.
And then people can call you as well. Do you want to give out your phone number again?
Yep, it is 612-719-0228.
All right. Well, you know what? We are at the end of our show, and Marie and I would like to thank you so much, Paula, for sharing your knowledge of Lyme disease all of us. And I know everybody out there is. You probably gave that one individual going, there's something going on. I don't know what it is. And, you know, just this was their validation of going, okay, I thought, now that here it is, I'm calling somebody, and I'm going to go the next step with it. So we want to thank you so much. We'll probably have you on again later down the road here.
Okay.
For, you know, more information that you have. But thank you. Thank you so much, Paula.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you later.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. And Paula's website again is paulaquinlan.com, and her phone number is 612-719-0228. You can follow our show on Blog Talk Radio by clicking on the follow button and check out our blog at Divine Goddess Radio at wordpress.wordpress.com, and our email address is divinegoddessradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback and insight on our show. You can reach Beth at 651-900-4136 and Marie at 651-303-0555. So you can go ahead and download our podcast or our show as a podcast using the iTunes or RSS feed button or on our Blog Talk Radio page. And also, when you're on Facebook, go search for Divine Goddess Radio and please like us. We hope that you'll join us each week, and we'll see you next Sunday. And we send love and light to all of you.
Have
good night.
Have a great week. Bye-bye.